Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music on the Air and in Your Ear. Real quick one here. Let's get right to it. Brett, I am Mo. You are the king of the casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And who is our guest?
Our guest is the amazing lead singer of House of Lords. He is James Christian. James, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brett. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we really appreciate it. Mo and I have been listening to House of Lords since the early 90s, and are big fans of the music, and are very happy that you've come on the show to talk about New World, New Eyes, your 10th studio album, which is coming out on June 12th.
Finally.
Yeah.
How long ago has this one been in the can now?
Since December. And yep. It was scheduled for an early 2020 release, and we all know what happened. And now that the video is done, we were just able to shoot it. Mind you, we had to do it in separate studios, but we still got it done on green screens. So we'll be together in spirit somehow.
What's that like for you, that period where you're waiting for an album to be released? You're probably not concerned about what the critics say, other than perhaps they lead to some new listeners. I mean, it matters what the fans think and that type of thing. But for you, I mean, I'm sure it's probably just anxiousness. Let's get it out there. Let's hear what people say and get out there. Start you know, playing it live.
Well, for sure. The what matters to me is what our fans give us back as feedback. I mean, reviewers. It's always like anything else, things are 50-50. You're just never going to please everybody, especially a reviewer that is comparing your work from 1991 or 1987 to 2020. It's not a fair comparison, you know. Everything changes. So musically, you have to stay true to what you do. You know, you have your fan base, and you know what they kind of enjoy listening to. So it all works that way for me.
What then, if we're going to describe the album to two fans, what would they expect from this album that is, you know, a little bit different, but also what should they expect that is familiar?
Well, this album, I mean, every album has their elements and that have their special parts to me. This one in particular, to me, is one of my favorite. I have a few favorites of all the catalog we have, and this one is right up there with them. I collaborated with someone that I worked on Demons Down with, Mark Spiro, and we put together, you know, 8 songs. That's what I wrote with Mark. The rest we did with other co-writers, but the 8 songs on there that are probably the most important on the record were done with my collaborator. They're just great songs, you know. They're not long songs. They're not like 5-6 minute songs where you're taking up all this time to fill up the time you're needed to do a record. They're 3-4 minute songs. So they get to the point and they have a message. What more can you ask for but good melodies, good lyric, and the best you can do with arrangements and production?
Absolutely. You know, do you let the song just kind of develop into being its own thing, or is it kind of a more of a cerebral process where you're ahead of time going, this is what I want to accomplish with this song, either musically or lyrically?
Yeah, the whole cerebral thing, sometimes it's better to just you know, confront the song, confront the track, and like listen to your track and say, okay, I hear it already. You know, usually when Jimmy gives me a track, he's really good at almost like insinuating what the melody is going to be. And a lot of times I've gotten tracks from people that never gave me a hint of where this song was going. So it was up to you. But when you have a good track and the chords are going by you, you're going, oh, I already hear that. And that's a wonderful feeling. And that's the feeling I got on this particular batch of tracks we got from Jimmy.
Is going to the studio something that you look forward to, or is the studio like, okay, that's work, but when you get out there and you play, that's fun?
Well, obviously the playing part is the most fun in the world, but being in the studio, the only stress level that you have, and it's not stress of recording because I love that process, it's getting lost in the fact that, is it really that good that you think it is, as good as you think it is? Because there'll be times I'm sitting here patting myself on the back going, oh, this is so good, you know, and you'll, and then you'll sit back and go, what if it's not, you know, and then, you know, you start second guessing yourself, and you can never do that. You just have to believe that if you listen to it and you leave it for a day or a week and you come back to it, and it gives you the same feeling, you're on the right track. So that's the way I go about it.
Well, I was just interested because, you know, you're releasing so many albums with House of Lords and so many consistent albums. Like, so many bands don't actually do that. And then, of course, you've also got your solo work. So I guess, what does it bring? What do each of them bring to you as a person?
For me, it is, I guess, this recent last eight albums that we've done, I had almost 8 years of doing absolutely nothing because of the change in the music scene. After Demons Down, there was a real big lapse in any musical contributions from me or at this household. So I felt that once I got back into it, when Frontiers offered me the recording contract, that I had so many ideas and so much material, ideas for material, I should say, that I just continued. And Jimmy Bell was giving me fresh tracks to work with. There was no stopping us. And it got to the point where we literally had to tell ourselves, slow down. We don't need to do this that often. So, and they were anxious to get their legacy as part of the House of Lords legacy, because we already had three albums prior to that. So Jimmy and BJ wanted their own little catalog going. So now they definitely have that.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Now, one of the questions, I know that Demons Down is one of your favorite House of Lords albums. Now, do you think that there's a chance that you'd consider doing like a 30th anniversary show where you perform the entire album in 2022?
Well, it seems to be like, did somebody leak that out or something? Because everybody's asking me that. And it's like, and we have been. That's the last thing that I spoke about was I told the guys, you know, and really... The problem I see doing it is that 30th anniversary album would mean so much more if it was with the people who recorded that record, which was Tommy Aldridge, Greg Giuffria, myself, and we had numerous guitar players, Mitch Perry, a couple of other guitar players I can't even remember. So it would, if we use a lineup like that, would it be as effective if I use the current House of Lords? It might be. So that's something I'm speaking with the label Frontiers, maybe possibly calling up Greg and saying, get out of Las Vegas and let's come down here and let's rehearse this. He's so lazy over there. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's very comfortable, but I'd love to have him back on stage again. He was a great guy to see on stage because he was so visual, and to hear his, his keyboards were, when being on stage with that amount of keyboards and the sound that came out of them sometimes was pretty awesome. I used to turn around and go, wow, this is just amazing. I'm used to guitars and a little keyboard piano here, but not this wall, you know, so it was something.
It makes me wonder, you know, if you were to go back and you think to yourself, you know, three decades ago, you walk into essentially Jeff Ferret, it's getting renamed and you're the new singer. And could you have imagined 30 years later that you would still be playing with House of Lords and it would be your band?
No. And you know what? It's not even something I wanted because I really didn't, putting my name, going out as House of Lords, knowing I was the only surviving member, when all the people around me were established musicians, was very intimidating to me. I almost didn't want to do it. And if I had my preference, it would be the same guys, even though I love my members that I have now. But I loved working with one unit and working with the first three albums with Greg and Chuck. I'm sorry Lanny had to go after the first record, and you know, people started dropping off here and there because of political stuff. It was all internal business stuff. Had nothing to do with the music. Sad part. It probably never is. about personal relationships unless you hate the people you work with, and that was never the case for me. I loved working with them. So me getting back with doing Demons Down with the boys, if that was something that could happen, I would do it in a heartbeat.
And you talk about the intimidation of coming into that. How about the fact that it's Gene Simmons as well, you know?
Yeah.
So what's your first meeting like with him, and was that nerve-wracking?
It was the last thing I had to do, because it was narrowed down to two singers, and before the either singer was going to be approved, they had to meet with him. And basically, Gene is a nice guy. Overall, he is a nice guy, but he knows he can intimidate you. So that meeting, he definitely intimidated me. And I think maybe the fact that I was intimidated impressed him, because the other guy was a Ford model. You know, he blonde hair down to his legs, and you know, perfectly cut. I'm going, Jesus, I'd date this guy. You know? So he was like perfect, and I thought to myself, you know, it's not that I thought I was a bad looking guy, but I just if you were looking for an image, the other guy certainly had it. So it had to come down to the interview process, and basically what Gene told me was it was the voice. He goes, and to tell you the truth, he goes, everybody in House of Lords, that's what they wanted. They did not want a symbol up on stage that couldn't do what they needed to do. They wanted to be taken seriously. So that's how I got that gig. And plus the fact he asked me if I did drugs, I said no. He was happy about that too. Because stickler about that.
Mm-hmm. It's true that when we heard you, though, back then, that band, it was like it immediately hit, you know. I remember Brett playing the album for me while we were playing the old PC Madden, yeah. You know, and the first time. And it's like you could just hear there just felt like there was more talent in that band than in most others. And there's a lot of talented bands out there. Don't get me wrong. In that era, yeah. Doing, you know, that style of music, probably more than most people give them credit for. But you could just hear the talent in House of Lords, and it was, you know, it knocked me on my butt.
Well, I got to tell you, you and me both, because I got to hear the demos. The demos were fantastic, and David Glenn Isley was singing on them, and I thought to myself, he's also a really great singer, mm-hmm. and it all worked, you know, what I heard. But then when I got in the studio. It was the first day I got in the studio, and these guys were laying down the real tracks. I was like, this is unfucking believable. The Ken Mary on drums. I've heard drummers before, but I never heard anything like that. I never heard anyone play that consistent ever in my life. You know, it's like, and Chuck right on bass. I'm thinking to myself, what have I gotten myself into? And then this guy pops out, this gigantic 6'3" guy. Says, I am Andy Jones. And I thought, oh, boy. Of all people, Andy Johns is producing my album, my first album. I'm a greenhorn working with the guy who's worked with Robert Plant. What am I doing here? So, I thought everything was like surreal. I just thought it was a dream. So as I'm doing my vocals, I had 7-8 days to do 10 songs because, you know, they were working at a very fast pace. They wanted to get this thing released. And I had Gene Simmons in the studio. I had Andy Johns behind the board. It worked so well that I can't even imagine. I think that part when I was doing my vocals was one of my strongest moments because I was so inspired that it was just pouring out of me. And luckily, there was enough there for them to do what they needed to do to put this record out. But that first album was so put out so fast, I don't remember most of it.
I imagine it's actually probably a surreal experience for the first several years, not just that moment. Like everything is so fast. Like that's it. You cut the album, you cut your, mm-hmm. you know, you get the video out there. You're on, you know, MTV. Then you're touring and you're doing, you know, shows with other established bands. All of a sudden, it must have been just a wave.
It was a wave, and it was the best time of my life. I was ready for it, so nothing fazed me. Being ill. That was no problem. I was going to go through it. I was going to break through it. There was nothing that I wanted to do more than to just get out there and play on those stages. So I was dedicated to it. I would have done it for nothing, I swear to God, because it was my lifelong dream. And I got to appreciate it more and more as the years went on, because those moments don't last forever, not for anyone. I mean, unless you're the Rolling Stones, and, you know, yeah. I mean, but, and even, I don't even think they remember what they did in these, you know, 70s and
80s. We know why.
Yeah, yeah, seems unlikely.
I mean, everybody's getting older. I mean, I've been, you know, we're getting older and heavier. I mean, you know, it's just, I almost feel like calling the band House of Pancakes these days, you know, because we're just... I'm only kidding, because we're all in decent shape, but and we just did a video, so when you know you're going to be on camera, you make sure you look your best. So, but we're
back.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, it's got such a cool cover, and you guys actually, like, since you have cool covers every time, it seems like. Is that kind of working with Frontiers? Do they take a part in that, or is that all you? Or how do you kind of come up with these cool covers? And tell me about this one for New World, New Eyes. I think it's really nice, awesome.
The my only stipulation to anybody that does our covers is one thing, that you always incorporate the House of Lords coat of arms. Because Gene Simmons had that coat of arms specially designed for us. It's on every album that we do, somewhere or another, it's in the design. And it's kind of the only thing that I ask for. And they can do pretty much anything else they want, but that's got to be there on every album cover.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a wonderful looking piece. And of course, you know, Mo and I have talked a lot about band logos and just how much... the band gets associated with the logos, and I think that it's important to have something that's really consistent throughout that fans can see and be like, oh, House of Lords, Kiss, right? You know, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, also it's merchandising, because when we tour and we're in Europe, we can't keep enough t-shirts. They have the ones, the traditional black t-shirt with the silver coat of arms on it. And they sell, it looks like a Harley shirt, you know, I don't know, it looks tough or something, but they love them, you know. And then we have others that just have the colored coat of arms and stuff, but it looks great. And merchandising, it's a great tool. And again, I go back to Gene Simmons, who is the master of merchandising. Nobody did merchandising than Kiss does, you know. So he had come up with ideas, like when we released Can't Find My Way Home, he wanted to have something that goes out to all the program directors around the United States and Canada and Europe. So he made these little sword and stone. So it would say House of Lords on the stone with the swords sticking into it. But it was an envelope opener. So you could pull the stone out and open your envelope and put the sword back in. It was amazing. And people, the program directors loved it. And I don't know, but all I know is that Can't Find My Way Home. It was like one of the number one songs on AOR radio for many weeks. So I'm thinking maybe he had the right idea. They were playing the crap out of that song.
Well, and I will say that I do believe that your version is superior to the original. So,
well, and that's saying a lot, because the original was an inspiration to me. And so when I decided to go to the band with that song, it wasn't a, there was no argument. They all loved the song, but they just thought it kind of just died. It kind of started and stopped and never went anywhere else. So we said, we're going to put something on to the end of this song and take it to the next level. And that's where the birth of that second part of the song came in.
And that's exactly it. That it's that second part of the song where I'm like, yes, now you've taken the song that is really good and you've made it even better.
Well, you can thank Led Zeppelin for that, because Stairway to Heaven was the inspiration. Started out as a ballad and turns into, you know, the bombastic ending.
I've heard of that band. They're pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask you is, like, you're producing. So what did you learn from Andy Johns and some of the other producers that you've worked with to bring to the producing process now?
Well, the one thing about vocals that Andy Johns showed me is that he told me that sing songs through. Don't just like do the verse and then wait and then do the chorus. And then he goes, sing them through each time. And when he was putting my vocals together, I said, no, use this part. That was better than that. He'd say, it doesn't feel as good as that one, even though this one was maybe a little spot on pitch wise. This one had more of the emotion. He learned, he knew that things didn't have to be perfect to be wonderful. Hence, listen to Led Zeppelin and listen to that double tracking. I mean, I would have never let that go by. I mean, you can hear two guys singing almost in different keys. But it was a magic that nobody ever catches anymore. The human element of vocals. You know, you're listening to somebody and he's spot on perfect. You think, well, I like Rod Stewart, you know, because he's like, and I do too, because he doesn't really care about that. He just lets it out and sings it, and it comes out not perfect, but beautiful.
Yeah, so, it's the emotion that it carries from him into you that right. makes it work. That's the whole point. Yeah. I mean, if you're generating an emotion, you're succeeding with music. If you're not, right. you're not.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, look at it this way. If you had a half day decent voice and you spend enough time in the studio, you're going to get something. But if you want the magic of a track, I've learned, and this is something again from Andy Johns, always make sure your demos are done on a good mic. I've done my song Can't Find My Way Home, the first half was the demo. Remember
really?
My Name. Yeah, Remember My Name was the demo. What's Forever For was the demo. These were all vocals that I did on a not high 12 track, but I was smart enough to do them with a really good high quality mic. And I, you know, and people like Gene Simmons would go, if you can't beat it, you got to use your demos. And I said, you know what? I don't feel I can do a better job than that, because it does everything that I want to do. And if I was going to do it back in the studio again, I would be trying to copy myself. And it's the truth. So I ended up using the demo versions, because you're not under pressure. You're just singing it because you don't know if it's going to even be on the album. And you get your best performances that way.
You know, speaking of performances, I mean, I think we're getting closer to the point where we're going to be able to see some sort of live performances, but nobody knows yet. And, you know, when you have a new album out, I imagine that's extra frustrating. Do you have any thoughts kind of on what's going on with the world? And I mean, it's gone beyond the pandemic now into other things. It's just a crazy time.
It's incredibly crazy. I have my opinions about it, but if I give opinions about anything, I know that 50% of the people are going to be pissed off. So I keep things to myself. The one thing I can say is that right now with what's going on here in the States, the looting and the rioting has got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
That has got to stop. There's no, it's not advancing anybody's, it's not advancing the world or what went on with this killing. And one way, or it's just not. We got a person that was murdered, and we all know that. The majority of the country feels that the man was murdered and unjustly. But the rioting, what does that have to do with any of it?
No, I agree. I agree. Yeah. And if somebody has another opinion of you, all I can say is, instead of saying, well, then I don't want to hear from you, say, yeah, well, let's talk and then maybe try and come to an understanding, because we're all people, right?
Yeah, we are. And that's a really good thought. But believe it or not, it is so divided here in the U.S. right now that you can't say one thing one way or the other, because nobody's listening. They're just not listening. And we're in a bad place. Hopefully, we're going to get through this, and people will, with sane, more... With a little bit more compassion for people, because I don't think somebody looting a store is doing any good for their own community.
No.
If you're going to rob from your own people, so
absolutely. And so onto a slightly happy topic. One question that I did have, I mean, I'm sure me and Brad probably could go with you for like 7 days, but
enough questions. All right.
But one question I did have, so in your household, being all, you know, also married to a singer of, you know, great success, is music being played all the time? Is it being discussed all the time? Is your own music or other people's music? Or is that work and there's an embargo on music in the house?
Well, no. I wish, you know, there is no embargo on music because our daughter is involved in the music business as well. You know, she's in Broadway, but it's still music at theater, whatever you want to call it. And Robin and I are constantly doing projects. We talk music a lot, and we disagree on things, and we agree on a lot. Most of our friends are musicians. I don't know if it's by design. I'd like to have other friends from outside, but sometimes my conversations just naturally go to music. And I have, you know, I probably could be boring somebody else that doesn't really have a clue about it or doesn't really not interested in what I want to talk about. So by design, most of our friends are musicians.
Funny, I'm the opposite. I'd like to have friends who are only musicians.
That's funny. Well, yeah, you know, we're a great bunch of people. I have to agree with you there. We are definitely interesting to chat about, but when you're around a lot of other musicians, it can get really crazy. Everybody's got an opinion. Try working with different lead singers and different guitar players, and everybody has a different way they're going to do things. And so we have our heated moments as well. Robin has the greatest group of friends. When she was in New York, everyone from Chris Lord-Alge to, I mean, the guy still emails here and texts Robin pretty much on a weekly basis because they're such good friends. And I think he's like the best mixer on the planet. So these are the people that she hangs out with. So I think that they're a little bit more high end than my friends.
Yeah, I suspect, you know, she's got some good stories.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm saying, is that you? She got pictures with people like Julian Lennon and Danny DeVito and all these people. It's like, I said, why do you know these people? Oh, well, we grew up and she used to live in Los Angeles for like 11 years. I lived in Los Angeles too, but my friends weren't Danny DeVito. Mine was Mario the Baker down in the corner.
Who's also a good guy.
I'm sure he's a great
good guy. I went to him every other week, but you know, and the only friend I had, which I could tout to her, because when we just met, I did a what do you call those benefits for John McEnroe, who happened to be a House of Lords fan because of Can't Find My Way Home and love this song. So he invited me to perform it with, and I'm going to say the producer's name. I know I'm going to forget it. He produced Whitney Houston. You got to know this guy. You guys are musicians, so you know his name. Oh, David Foster.
David Foster. Right, of course. Canadian.
So, oh, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah.
I do Can't Find My Way Home, and they bring up Alex Lifeson to play guitar, who actually played the acoustics. I played the finger-picking. Alex Lifeson played all the other parts. And John McEnroe played guitar and only sang one verse, and then I sang the rest of the song. So this is my, you know, my moment. And I get to sit with Mickey Rooney. This is how far back it goes, when he was alive. So this whole benefit was for the benefit of, I don't even know what the benefit was, but it was definitely a worthy cause, but there were all celebrities there. I didn't consider myself a celebrity, but I felt like one at that moment, you know, because of the fact that I was doing this for John McEnroe, and Robin got to see that, and she was pretty impressed. But then the next day she took me to meet somebody else that blew that out of the water. I can't remember his name, but I knew she knows more people in the business than I do.
But at least you get to know them together in your own way.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, look, they were all, we lived in a great town called Malibu, which we had to get out of because it got so expensive, we just couldn't live there anymore. But people would just come in and out of these little colonies in Malibu that were just, all they were musicians, actors, and people. And it was really wonderful, but it was almost like not real, because if you leave that little bubble, you go out into the real world, which we ended up doing, moving to Florida.
Oh, the real world. Well, the real world has unfortunately encroached upon us, and I know that that we're running out of our time with you, which is a shame
Yeah.
because I could certainly I know we could talk forever. I'll leave you with my two favorite songs off the album, which is The Both of Us and 5 Bucks of Gasoline.
Oh
Those
my
are my two.
goodness. I'm so glad you like 5 Bucks of Gasoline. That's been like the would you say the dark horse?
Yeah,
You know, I'm
I can imagine.
I would use like nobody, you know, I wasn't sure if anybody was gonna get it. You know? That's one of those songs that we were doing it. I'm going, I don't know, people might not think this is House of Lords. I just loved it. It was one of my favorites to do. So, and that made me feel good because no one has commented on that song yet.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I love
They're
that
my
song.
faves.
It's fantastic. But James, this is the point in the interview where we let you promote the new album and promote yourself and tell the folks where to find it and you.
Okay, you can find the record anywhere online. If you just tap in House of Lords. As a matter of fact, I just got a shipment in myself. They always give me a complimentary batch of 25 song, 25 CDs. And what I usually do is whoever orders them through Facebook. I haven't posted it yet because the album isn't officially released, but you'll be able to find a place on my Facebook page, James Christian, where there's only 25, but I'll have them signed and sent to you, and you'll get a copy of them. As far as anywhere else, you can get it. They're everywhere. You know, if you put House of Lords, you'll into a Google search, you'll get all the places where you can buy it.
Awesome. Well, James, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it immensely. And I know
Thank you.
we're big fans of you, love the new album, and urge everybody to go out and check out New World, New Eyes from House of Lords. But all the best in the future, and we look forward to hearing
Hey,
all the new
check out
music.
all of House of Lords' discography.
Exactly.
It's all, you know,
It's all
it's all
great.
good stuff. It
Well,
really is.
thank you guys. This was
That's the
really
key.
informative. I mean, we went over almost a half an hour, and I get this phone has been beeping in that this guy's calling, but I'm going to have to make it up to him now on the
Okay. Well,
next
thanks so
interview.
much, James, and thank you for
We're not sorry
spending
that,
time.
but
I'll take every second with you we can get.
I'm going to tell him that too.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
Jake,
James.
you guys take care.
All right. You too. All the best. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Try to escape. I'd be here inside a cell, a prisoner under.